Welcome to Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And here we are.
Oh my God, Tony. Hot tips.
Good Lord.
Oh, it's Christmas Eve. We've got to give them some quick hot tips so they can like figure out everything really fast and have so much fun and not worry about, you know, getting things right. And here you are listening right now. Hot tips. Christmas Eve.
You have me flummoxed.
I know. You're freaking out on me.
You want to do hot tips.
Hot tips. Yeah. Like secret stuff.
They shouldn't. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, here, please present secret number one for Christmas success.
Okay. Secret number one is you should already have all the tools you need to do the job. Oh,
secret
too
number
late.
One.
Hopefully
no,
you'll get some today for a Christmas present.
That sounds
Christmas
like
Eve present.
But there's no hot tip in that secret number one.
No, the biggest thing with working in a kitchen anywhere, the most important aspect of cooking is to have the very best product. That doesn't mean it has to be expensive. That means it needs to be fresh. It needs to be the best you can find and cook it honestly. I was reading a Paul Bocuse book that was written in 1978 the other morning. This time of the year, I do a lot of cookbook shopping for my cooks and for the waiters as well and for friends. And I look for old books of my favorite chefs. And I've never seen this cookbook by him before. It was done in England and published in England and published a couple times, but started in 1978. And I've been looking for this forever. Defines what Nouvelle cuisine was in that time, what Nouvelle French cuisine was. And somewhere in the 1990s, he was on the cover of Wine Spectator and really well defined what Nouvelle cooking was, what it was supposed to be, what it sort of turned into, and, you know, the evolution of it into what, probably the early 80s, maybe the late 70s.
Middle to late 80s is when it became kind of a joke.
Yeah, right. So I've always been looking for that article in the Wine Spectator, but so to get this cookbook and read what he writes about, you know, what his version, and that's all he says, you know, I mean, that's his point, is that all these great chefs learned from other great chefs who were old school. You know, they were doing food basically from the 19th century, and they're all men. You did have one woman at La Mère Brasière, Eugénie Brasière, in Lyon, which is really exciting, and she was part of that group. She was a three-star chef, so very unusual, but all the rest of the people are men. They learned from these old school chefs, and then either they were coming back from World War II or they were just, you know, really starting on their own path. They were old enough to start their own businesses or run their own kitchens, and they really wanted to adjust the way they were cooking. So my piece of advice stems from what Paul Bocuse says, which is you buy the very best product you can and you cook it to the best of your skills. You know, it's all about, in the end, it's all simplicity is perfection. The simplicity of a beautiful scallop that's super fresh, that's seared gorgeously in a good hot pan and decent oil. I mean, it can be corn oil. It just needs to be fresh corn oil that hasn't been sitting in the cupboard for 3 years or, you know, that you've used before. You know, it's fresh corn oil going into a beautiful, clean, high quality pan. I mean, that's where your money goes. You know, when you start talking about where does the money, you know, where am I spending? You have to have a couple of really good pans. You have to have a knife or two that's excellent. You have to have some small tools, and those, thankfully, don't need to be that expensive. But one of the things he talks about in this cookbook is, you know, I'm going to give you a bunch of recipes, but these are guidelines. And I love that he says that because he's so old school and those guys are usually super disciplined. The fact that he's just laying it out there in the beginning chapter saying, just take these as ideas, play with it, do what you want with it. You don't have to follow it exactly, but it's, you know, read it first, think about it. And then, you know, maybe you go to the market and you can't find one of these ingredients. Then you adjust the recipe. So cooking is a living, breathing thing. It's ever changing. It's ever evolving, whether it's based on product or skills or where you are, or, you know, what kind of kitchen you're working in or whatever.
So it's Christmas Eve. You already have all the provisions. In order to execute, what do you have to do? What do you have to do in your kitchen in order to do this correctly? If you have one oven and you have one range and the range has limited amount of burners and your oven is limited, then you may want to, you're talking about adapting recipes, you may want to adapt your menu for the cooking equipment that you have, let alone the mise en place.
Right. And hopefully you've already thought about that. But if we are right here, right now, and it's Christmas Eve, and you're like, oh gosh, you may have to give something up. Make it tomorrow. It's okay. I admit, when I have to cook in a house, even if it's my own house, I get a little stressed out when I cook at home because I want everything to be perfect mostly. But, you know, I don't cook there that much. And, you know, all of a sudden you got people standing around you talking to you. There are a lot of distractions. You want to talk to them. You may have children running around. There are a lot of distractions.
I don't want to talk to them.
So really it's about, you know, not feeling so defined by your decision in the end. If you're like, oh my God, I just don't have room for these sweet potatoes that I wanted to make. Well, then just make them tomorrow. I mean, no one's going to leave your house crying or screaming with their hair on fire, you know, basically giving you permission to, hey, you know, play it cool, do what you want. And if you're uncomfortable about something and you're like, I just don't think I'm going to do this right, don't make it. You know, do what you do well and like the things that you feel really comfortable with, go for it, make it. And if you find that your oven's too crowded, I mean, just don't forget that you might have a grill outside.
You can also be smart. Let's say you're cooking a larger piece of meat, mm-hmm. a roast beef or something. Mm-hmm. You're going to rest it before you slice it.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
So, and you mentioned sweet potatoes. So maybe you have sweet potato gratin that you're making.
Yeah.
And you don't have room for those two things in the oven at the same time. Get the sweet potatoes done. Set them on top of the oven. Let them stay warm-ish. Deal with the lamb rack or the beef or the
big
guinea fowl or whatever it is that
right.
needs to come out and let it rest. And as it rests for several minutes, get that sweet potato hot.
Yeah.
By the time you finish, you know, resting, slicing, plating the meat, you'll have the sweet potatoes.
That's why warming drawers are so great if you have them. They take up a lot of room, so a lot of us don't have, I mean, I don't have room for warming drawers in my kitchen, but if you have them, they sure do solve that problem. But if you don't, like you say, well, do it gradually. But I will also say that underneath, I have the original stove that was in my house before I renovated my kitchen is, you know, it's a glass top electric stove. And the bottom drawer, actually, I have put things down in there and kept it warm with the oven on, obviously. So there are drawers or maybe broilers underneath. You know, recognize if that's a place where you can actually hold something and maybe keep it warm. That's another little nice little spot to maybe handle some of your product. And also the other thing is do what we do in kitchens when we run out of space, which is set up a bain-marie. So if you have a big, you know, we call them hotel pans, but a big deep pan that you can put over two burners, put water, you know, maybe what is that, 2-3 inches of water in the bottom, depends on how big your dinner is and how much things weigh, of course. If you have too much water, things are going to float. But put water in and turn it on low so that water stays warm. And you can keep things hot that way, too, whether it's sauces and maybe potato puree or mashed potatoes, things that don't have to stay in their original, you know, form. Maybe it's some sort of liquid like you know, something like potato puree, but definitely stocks and sauces and soups and anything. You could just line those up in one of those. And that gives you, you know, you're actually taking two burners that are this size and suddenly you've made it into this, you know, this
big apparatus.
Yeah, this big pan. Yeah. So that's a really good, that's a hot tip, Tony. Okay.
That's hot. That is a hot tip.
It's super hot.
There are a lot of people right now going through their cabinets trying to find
like
things
this big,
that fit together to do this.
And I hope you find one. And, you know, like I said, don't forget, you might have a grill outside. I mean, especially here, it looks like it's not going to be as cold as they thought it was going to be. So it really wouldn't be a hardship at all to pop outside and either turn it on, keep things warm in there, or cook in there, or both. And some people have grills that have the burners, which, gosh, that would be really great because then you could, you know, literally heat something up out there. And that way, you know, but that's, you know, not everybody has that. But yeah, I think it comes down to a matter of organization and just take a minute, stop, breathe, think, and how can I make this make sense?
I'll give you my hot tip.
Okay, I'm scared.
Every party, every time I've ever taught anyone, no, what are you scared for? Every time I've ever taught someone, I didn't say that in some sinister way, did I? About doing a party.
Well, you're the
handling
banquet
a large
man.
Party.
You are the banquet man. I am not. I never did banquets before.
People walk in the door.
Yeah.
And you see their body language. And okay. their shoulders are up around their ears.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? It is because they do not have a drink, and they're not sure where to get one, and they have no food, and they're not sure where to get it. And they don't know what else to do with their hands, so they rise up.
Oh.
And their shoulders rise up with them.
Gosh. Okay.
It's like a social flotation situation. So, You know how calm everyone looks once they have a drink in their hand, right?
Oh, yeah. And they probably feel calm, too.
And they have a little nibble, too. Mm-hmm. So you have to make it easy when someone walks in the door. You take a coat. If it's 1958, you take their hat. And you make sure that you have something that's very easy, whether it's something passed, whether you have a tray by the door, whether you're walking around with, champagne glasses to just... or have someone follow you into the kitchen. This is the cocktail we're making. But get a glass in their hand, mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And two, very easy, popular snack. And I'm not, anything that absorbs a little bit of alcohol or is salty and makes you interested in more food.
It's always wise.
These are very basic things. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, you watch the body language of that room change, and because everyone knows they're going to be satisfied, and it makes it an awful lot easier to duck into the kitchen, take your time and do things well if people are not edgy or coming in the kitchen asking, well, can I help?
Right. it's hard for everybody.
But there's my...
So make your guests comfortable. That's your plan.
Yeah, that's my first...
What are some of the things you like to give them, like hit them with right away? I thought you were going to say something specific, but definitely salty.
Gougères are easy.
Yeah, because I have Conte crackers. I have the recipe right in front of me, so I was thinking about telling everybody about that, too.
Crostini with almost anything.
Yeah, that's...
Crostini with eggplant caponata. And eggplant caponata you can make yesterday, and it's good cold, and you make your crostini and they're hot today. Mm-hmm. Pass those.
Mushrooms.
Eggplant mousse.
Mushrooms and rosemary.
Is easy. Mm-hmm. Mushrooms with fromage blanc and a mousse. Mm-hmm. Easy. And those are things you can just pipe right on.
Yeah. Goat cheese.
Yeah. You can find that one heirloom tomato that's $40 in the grocery store right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was
thinking. And make a little tiny garnish for the goat cheese. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Reggiano and tomato, a little basil.
You can make a Christmas tree out of it and put a little piece of cilantro on the top.
Okay, Conte crackers.
Exactly. Yeah, Conte crackers.
I love this. All right, so this is a relatively good-sized recipe, but it's not huge. And
so
you can just put them in the freezer. It
serves 45.
Yeah. So 4 ounces of Reggiano, 16 ounces of Conte, 8 ounces of butter at room temperature, 10 ounces of all-purpose flour, and then it's seasoned with cayenne, salt, and freshly ground black pepper. And the cayenne, you want to feel it, but you don't want it to be spicy. So just, probably... couple pinches of cayenne, salt, and pepper to taste, recognizing that Reggiano and Conte have a good level of salt to them. But two wonderful cheeses. All you do is basically put it all in the mixer and blend it with a paddle attachment. And it's very easy to make. You're making basically, they're called cheddar pennies in the South. Obviously, they are made with cheddar cheese. I prefer the Conte cracker made with these cheeses, but cheddar pennies are great, too. And you just roll out the logs, and you put them in the freezer to get them.
So you're making like a dense batter and then rolling it out?
Well, it's a dough.
Sort of like
I wouldn't say the word batter.
Dough.
I would say the word dough. Right, yeah. So it's like, it's almost like making, actually, it's more like making tart dough than anything, but it's going to be smooth and pulled together. And the fun thing is actually taking it out of there and rolling it like a log into a log onto your countertop, which, wipe down your countertop. A tiny bit of moisture left as residue on the countertop is okay, as long as it's clean. And just roll out, or forget that I said that. Actually, that might be confusing. So just roll it out into logs, and then I roll it into plastic. You roll it right into a piece of plastic wrap, twist the ends, and pop it in the freezer, just so it becomes firm. If you do actually want to make it today, you're like, oh wow, that sounds good, I want to make that for my guest tonight, you can make it today, but you've got to get it cold. It certainly doesn't need to be frozen.
And then you just slice it like cookies.
Yeah, and probably about this, they're called cheddar pennies, so probably about the thickness of a half dollar coin, maybe a little bit thicker than that, but you want them to be relatively thin. And then you just lay them out on a cookie sheet and bake them at 350 degrees. Usually it takes maybe 5-6 minutes. You want them to be a little golden. Oh gosh, they're good. And then the other thing I do to this recipe,
they're pretty great for a glass of champagne, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And you can also add, I like to add toasted sesame seeds, or as we call them, bene seeds, to it as well. And you could certainly put poppy seeds in there, but if you want to just make it the way they are, they're perfect the way they are. But I also like a little toasted sesame in. But those are fun. And that's something, you can just have a big bowl of those laying around at the front door, or where you're serving cocktails. If they're going to walk up to a table to get cocktails, it's nice to have something like that right there. They have a little napkin. They can grab a few of those and snack on those while they're getting started. As you say, you want to absorb the alcohol, so.
We're showing our orientation towards this holiday in functionality. And we need to have the recipe for this up on the website. Go to WYPR.org, the Foreman Wolf page, and besides finding our podcasts, you'll also find the recipe from today's program. And what is the proper title on those guys?
The Conte crackers.
Conte crackers?
Yeah, that's what I'll call them.
Also known as alcohol absorbers. We come back on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. It's more, how do you say it?
Hot tips.
There you go.
Woo-hoo.
All of that and more on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And your Christmas elf, Cindy Wolf.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, I love Christmas so much, Tony.
I know you do.
I do. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's such a fun time of the year.
I would ask you to shake your shingle bells, but you...
Or just call me Mrs. Claus.
Oh, my God.
Either way.
Mm-hmm. Today, you were all excited because you wanted to give last minute...
Hot tips. I just wish we could talk to people because I would love to just, right now, I think it would be so great to be able to answer people's questions like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this and this isn't going right.
Maybe next year you should just show up in someone's kitchen on Christmas Eve as the angel of Christmas dinner gone better.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Well, who would be at my kitchen then? I have to be in my kitchen.
You guys are pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I was thinking sponge sugar. What do you think of that, Tony? I think that would be fun, albeit a little dangerous. I think it would be a fun thing to do with family on Christmas Eve.
Nothing like hot molten sugar and small children.
A lot of people do craft projects. Like, we make snowflakes and things like that. We always do, well, in my family, we do a bunch of craft projects, and that's kind of what we do while we're waiting for the food to be,
Cindy Wolf
up.
On making snowflakes.
But
that'd be a good program.
Sponge sugar is super cool, and it makes for a beautiful, beautiful garnish, and it's very inexpensive. If you take a pound of sugar, which is a lot, so you can break this recipe down, but a pound of sugar, 5 ounces of water, and 3.5 ounces of corn syrup. And you just bring the water and sugar up to a boil, and you add the corn syrup, and you bring the whole thing up to 293 degrees Fahrenheit. And
293 does not work.
Is right on, and I am not kidding. And then you have to oil your surfaces that you're going to work on, which has to be a pretty big one. So this really is a project. I'm just going to say this quickly because I do think it's kind of fun, and it's also something you can do at another time. But Bûche de Noël is Croquembouche. I'm thinking of Croquembouche is a very traditional French dessert for Christmas holiday time, and of course that's profiteroles.
I love Croquembouche.
Oh, me too. And then the traditional thing is to wrap the sponge sugar around the Croquembouche, so that's really why I thought of it. But you can do this anytime. Do it for someone's birthday cake or whatever, and you have to take pliers and take the end off of a whisk. So the rounded part of the whisk, you have to cut it off because you want the little. The spiky things. Tony's shaking his head at me while I'm talking, just so you know. And then what you do is you oil it, so with corn oil, a neutral oil, and then you oil your surface that you're going to work on. You can take two broomsticks, put them over two chairs or something.
What a lovely family project. First destroy the kitchen equipment, then fly away.
And then what you do is you dip the oiled whisk into the sugar, and you go back and forth.
You like flick it around.
Flick it around. Good terminology. You flick it around over those, and then it's just you make tons of sponge sugar. It's really pretty, and if you are making your croquembouche, maybe somebody's making one, that's how you garnish it.
Our producer, yes. Luke, is losing his mind on his sheet pan. Well, the thing is, you don't just throw it around the room.
No, you throw it over the surface.
You have to kind of spin it when you flick it. Otherwise, the only way you get something that looks like a giant bird's nest, which is what this turns out like,
keep going back and forth. You go back and forth at high rate of speed. You actually do it. It should be horizontal, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then you can form it into a bird's nest if you want to.
You wrap it that way.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of my favorite things.
Croquembouche you didn't describe. The spun sugar is my least favorite part of a croquembouche.
Okay.
I have to admit. It's cool looking.
Yeah, I love it.
It is cool looking.
I think it's fun to eat.
It's obviously...
It's like cotton candy, but in the highest form.
And I like it just for the destruction of kitchen equipment and flying away on a broom part. But
just weaving some mystery into Christmas Eve.
Yeah, our little shoe pastries, right? Pretty darn easy to make.
About a shoe, right?
That you bake and then you pipe a filling, into.
Yeah, or ice cream.
Pastry cream or flavor pastry cream. And you build what looks like a big old Christmas tree out of one after the other of these
guys.
You
hold it together with caramel.
And it's nice if you can have surprises. It's nice if you have surprises of different flavors in different shoe pastries as you build that guy up.
Well, that's another thing, you know, holding that together with caramel, and caramel also makes a great sauce. I have that recipe as well. So there's many different ways to make caramel, but
that would be very useful, I think, for listeners. Just
well, you
a basic
use it all the time caramel. Oh my
caramel,
gosh.
Caramel
yum,
for
yum,
your
yum, yum,
ice cream. Very straightforward.
Exactly. Well, I also have my ice cream recipe, so I'm kind of you're getting into my theme here, Tony. My hot tips.
Hot tips. It hot sounds tips. More like sweet tips.
3 ounces of butter, 10 ounces of sugar, 1.5 cups of heavy cream, 2 each egg yolks, and vanilla. Or you can make the easy one, which is 8 ounces of sugar, 1/2 cup of water, 1.5 cups of heavy cream, and 3 tablespoons of butter. And I suggest the second version. But you just melt the sugar and butter on moderate heat until caramelized, stirring constantly. You add the cream. You have to be very careful, but add it very slowly until it's dissolved, and then you let it cool.
This is to make your...
Caramel sauce.
Caramel sauce.
That's for caramel sauce. Yeah, and my last sweet comment is my ice cream recipe, which came from Marcelo Vasquez, my chef that I worked for in Charleston, South Carolina. And he was the first person to ever teach me how to make ice cream. And actually, that's not true. I learned how to make ice cream in a White Mountain machine at a different restaurant that I worked at in Charleston. But this is 8 egg yolks, 1 cup of sugar, 1 quart of cream, and 1 tablespoon of vanilla. This is a very rich ice cream. It's really tasty. You've been eating it forever. And I whip the yolks and the sugar until they're really fluffy. And that's a good 6-7 minutes on high in a mixer with the whisk attachment.
Your version is definitely on the road to frozen mousse.
Yeah, it's very decadent.
And away from ice cream.
Mm-hmm. You bring the cream to a boil and then just let it sit for a moment. And then this is a very unusual way to make ice cream. This is very Marcello. He would actually pour the hot cream into the, while the mixer is on the lowest speed, and obviously be extremely careful, but you pour the hot cream into the mixer that already has those whipped, the egg yolks and the sugar and the vanilla, actually. just pour it in slowly, really slowly, hopefully out of something that has a pouring spout, not the pot, because that'll be kind of hard to do if you haven't ever done it before. Let it just go, the mixer go on low speed for a couple of minutes. What it does is it helps the mixture to actually cool down a bit. Then you do need to cool down the mixture in an ice bath, and then you can freeze it. And of course, you can add vanilla bean to that. You can add, you know, bourbon to it. You can add whatever you want to it to flavor it. But it's good to know something like that. That's a good ice cream base. And you don't have to whisk the egg yolks and the sugar forever. You can do it really quickly and not have that mousse-like texture if you would prefer not to have that. So I'm done with my sweet tips. How about wine tips?
Well, do you want sweet wine tips?
No, not at all.
Or
no,
hot wine tips?
I think, you know, what are we going to start with when they come in the door? You know, let's say we're having pretty traditional food. You know, maybe how about what are they having when they come in the door? And then what happens if we're serving ham or something like that? A lot of people, I think, in this area probably serve for Christmas.
A couple of things. That when they come in the door, it's awfully nice to have bubbles. There are bubbles at many, many price points. So we often say champagne, but very easy to find as Prosecco or a sparkling wine from Spain called Cava or Conca. There's even a sparkling Malbec that we found in the last year with the classic Argentinian name of Guggenheim.
Wow.
That is very inexpensive, and people love the heck out of it. It's a little bit off dry. There's a lot of interesting sparkling wine at all different price points. And there's so many champagne from different small houses. There's no end of, I mean, Christmas that is tasting of small champagne houses and lots of snacks is my kind of a meal.
That sounds good to me.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But that's bubbles are awful nice getting in the door. I know that you should be thoughtful about something non-alcoholic, Sure. That's high quality and interesting. I just having had a holiday gathering, I found a mango that was in really good shape in the store. And Cara oranges just came into season.
Oh, good.
So it made it easy to make a non-alcoholic cocktail with that and a little ginger beer and lime juice.
Oh, that's fun.
And a
ginger beer?
A drop or two of walnut bitters. And yeah.
Okay. And walnut bitters. Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, put it in like an 80-year-old sort of funky coupe.
Nice.
You know, then the person with the most lavish-looking drink in the entire place is the person who's, I'm the designated driver.
There you go. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, and that worked.
Nice.
That worked very well.
Good. Yeah, I love fresh. Oh my gosh, I love fresh juice like that, and have a little something sparkling in there, and
Putting some energy into that is a big deal.
That's nice. Absolutely.
And you're gonna have kids, and doesn't have to just be soda that you have for kids. That can be something interesting, and it honestly doesn't have to be punch that's all sugar. That's the other thing, that an awful lot of traditional punches are either all booze or all sugar. Now we get to the terrible question.
What's that?
Do you like eggnog?
I love eggnog, but my mom made eggnog from scratch. So my mom made this really old-fashioned recipe, and I mean, I literally couldn't wait for Christmas Eve to have that eggnog. And of course, when we were children, obviously it didn't have any alcohol in it. And I prefer eggnog without alcohol in it. I just like the way the eggnog tastes.
That was not the way my house ran when I was a kid.
Well.
it was quite interesting. There was a lot of bourbon and there was a lot of rum. It was like someone couldn't make up their mind.
Oh, gee.
In the eggnog.
Oh, boy.
And me, from when I was 8, I was the guy who whipped everything. So my right arm was twice the size of my left arm when I was a little kid. Because they made a lot of eggnog at Christmas time, and a lot of it was consumed. And the story we always tell is about our dog, Cognac, is the name of the dog.
I love that name. That's so cool.
There was a low coffee table, and eggnog was left on the coffee table.
Oh, no.
Cognac loved eggs. He decided he was going to consume.
Oh, God.
And then we wondered what had happened to him. We were all sitting at dinner, and he comes in, and he's shaking and tottering, and he can't walk straight. He's obviously...
Oh, my gosh.
We're thinking about calling the vet, and...
Whoa, wow. That's not a good Christmas story.
No, it's not.
Oh, poor Cognac.
So please keep your eggnog out of reach of
your dog and your other pets.
Dogs and children, if you're going to make it high test.
Oh, golly.
Cognac was fine. He just had a hangover the next day. He just went and climbed underneath the piano and put his paws up on his head.
Poor guy. Well, but good eggnog can be really amazing. All right, Tony, so what's that wine we're going to have for that ham? What's that wine? What's it going to be?
Well, is it a fresh ham or is it...
No. Cured ham. Cured ham.
A cured ham. So the question for me immediately is, how sweet is the sauce? If this is one of those pineapple glaze numbers, that's very different from something with a purely savory
preparation. Let's just say it's purely savory.
Then you can do something relatively dry. Alsace, wine from Alsace would be fantastic. And you have a variety of price points and a variety of sweetness levels. Mm-hmm. The grapes ranging from Pinot Blanc to Riesling to Pinot Gris to Gewürztraminer. And more obscure stuff like Chasselas and Muscat. But there's a whole range of Alsace wine that would be great. And you're looking at a number of good vintages in the last several years. 11, 13. You can dig stuff out of... I keep old stuff in the cellar that I love. A lot of the fives are great right now.
That's fun. Good.
But that's the first place I go. Red wine is strange with
ham.
With ham like that.
That's interesting. Okay, good. What about lamb? You know, it could be leg of lamb or lamb racks.
Lamb's a good excuse to open a bottle of Châteauneuf du Pape or a Côte du Rhône Village or one of the more robust Côte du Rhône Village like Gigondas or Rasto. I guess Piemontese wine is very easy. If it's leg, not so much the rack. It's funny, rack of lamb makes me want to go to Bordeaux for wine choices. Pauillac, Saint-Julien, appellations like that. Cabernet Sauvignon-driven Bordeaux wines. The leg makes me kind of want to go to Piemonte and go to some of the more robust appellations for Barolo, like Serra Lunga d'Alba or Monforte d'Alba. So that's... That would be my lamb coverage.
Turkey? And I'm not calling you one, Tony.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's right. I grew up in that generation.
You say that all the time.
And you say that all the time.
I do.
Turkey is tough because the things that people want to have that are like that are lavish are not the wines that are really good with the bird. Beaujolais, Cru Beaujolais, is terrific with it.
Okay.
Again, wine from Alsace. Sparkling wine that's a little bit off dry does well. Red Zinfandel does well.
Hmm. How about if they're having a seafood dinner, you know, maybe having fish or lobsters? Well, that would be good. I've never had, or shrimp or something like that, or oysters.
Lobster's easy. It's American Chardonnay. Find the best one that you can. The more rich and showy that it is, the better it's going to show with lobster. Shrimp wants something a little bit brighter than that. Sauvignon, but maybe something not the crispy, crunchy kind of Sauvignon, maybe more like Bordelais Sauvignon. Shrimp also do really, really well with wines from the south of France and also a lot of the Italian coastal wines like Vermentino.
And then maybe game birds, because somebody's got to be having duck or
squab. That's always where I want to go.
Yeah, I just love duck at Christmas.
Duck or pigeon or guinea fowl.
Mm-hmm.
Duck is
pheasant.
Pretty easy once Bordeaux grape varietals. So if you're one of the people that you want to have the lavish bottle of California Cabernet Sauvignon, that's not a bad place to go with it, with the duck. Especially if you have a garnish that's a little bit fruity or preserved fruit or something, that'll handle the ripeness. The ripeness of the wine will handle that no problem with your duck. With guinea fowl, it's stronger than you think. It's a white meat bird, but it has really good intensity. And that's something that really good aged Barbera does well there. Barberesco does well there. First-class Burgundy does well there. So quail, pigeon, or squab, I should say, red meat birds that want something with really good intensity but not a lot of tannin. So if you look in Bordeaux, Pomerol, Sélimignon, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, that's great. Those are good. Yeah, those are great. That's nice to hear.
Making me thirsty.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, of course.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we get into a few more holiday tips, and then, of course, the kindest, gentlest, most lovely chef's challenge of the entire year.
Nah.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. What are some of your favorite memories?
Oh, my. Well, you know, I grew up in a complicated house, okay? I do have favorite memories. I remember fruitcake. Mm. One after the
happily
other.
Happily or unhappily, dear? Yeah, I don't remember being happy about any fruitcake.
When you're a little kid and what you want to eat is chocolate. And then maybe like next
or
on the list
canes.
Is...
Or candy canes.
But...
Don't tell me you didn't like candy canes.
I dislike candy canes.
Oh, for goodness sake. Wow.
My daughter even dislikes candy canes.
Hmm.
She was all excited because it looks so cool and it looks so Christmassy, and she caused a complete fuss at school to get to the candy canes really quickly and got to one, gave it two licks, and said, bleh. Like, that's my kid. Sorry, no candy canes. But fruitcake, I would like to figure out where they're trying to go with it. Like panettone, I love. Panettone, I would eat it all year long, but at Christmas, it's magical.
Uh-huh.
And I have a little trick that I like to do with panettone. Panettone, you know, is the big yeast-raised cake that has all kinds of dried fruits through it and usually gets, you make that very simple icing out of powdered sugar and a little bit of water, or hot wine is nice to do, a little sweet wine. And then drizzle it on top of that guy, and
so. But that's not dense, right? The panettone has a nice,
fluffy,
beautiful texture.
So
that's the problem. Fruitcake is like eating 25 pounds of dense God knows what.
I mean, it's like, the difference between an English cook and an Italian cook. Sorry, English cooks, but I'm about to throw you under the bus. And the English cook is going to pack everything into one tiny loaf, which is not the most attractive food word anyway, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to be every dried fruit and every spice and every nut. And
they're just too dense, I think. And,
you know, and serve it with hard sauce.
And sometimes too boozy, yeah.
Just trying to, like, it can be boozy, but it should be elegant, you know? That's,
well, too
panettone,
much.
Panettone, yeah. I have great memories of being in Liguria and sitting in a little trattoria and having panettone after this big, long fish meal. Mm-hmm. And it's not a fancy place, but they had a marvelous panettone sitting up on the bar.
How nice.
And asked for a slice and asked for a glass of the grappa of the owner's choosing. Mm-hmm. And I just took and sprinkled some of the grappa through the panettone so it soaked in just a little bit and ate that. And the guy that owned the place had not seen that, liked that so much, he came, sat with me, and we ate a lot of panettone,
cool.
Let's say.
No grappa, just a lot of panettone.
Well, the grappa was kind of gone, but yeah. But yeah, panettone I can eat all day, but
I'm sure there are excellent fruitcakes out there. I just, you know, it's got to be executed.
So listeners, if you have an amazing fruitcake recipe.
Yeah, we want it.
If you have the fruitcake that to end all fruitcakes.
Share with the world.
Take a picture.
It would be a service to the human race.
Take a picture, maybe, or have a little video of you presenting this amazing fruitcake.
There you go.
And send it to us at foremanwolf@wipr.org. And you can find our address, you know, just like all the other information on the webpage, wipr.org. Go to the Foreman Wolf page, and you'll find podcasts there. And hopefully, we'll be posting your fruitcake.
Yeah.
Where you can straighten me out.
That's good. That's a gift.
But it's a listener challenge, I guess, is what it should
there
be.
There you go. Let's,
maybe get me over my giant prejudice about fruitcake.
Fruitcake. Okay.
It goes with my prejudice against eggnog.
I don't like the dried fruit that's put in it. I think that's also one of the things. Those
pieces of dried fruit
are just like, ugh.
See, the thing is, in panettone, it's dried fruit also. The question is, what's the quality of what's going into it?
Exactly. Because you know those little green things that when we were kids that went in. I'm sure I don't even know what those were. Were those green cherries? I don't know. That's not natural.
There were green cherries.
Okay, that's scary. So yeah, that's the difference. I'm sure that is one of the main differences with the Italian, which is that it's like this gorgeous dried cherries and cranberries or prunes or whatever it is. I don't know what would they have in Italy that they would use. You know, I mean, and they probably have like you know, the Sicilian pistachios in there, which are like, you know, straight from heaven. Those things.
A lot of apricots and cherries. Usually.
Oh, apricots and cherries for sure. So. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be the main difference from what we were used to as a kid, because I know the dried fruit was very different back then. I mean, I bought a case of dates the other day, and they are the most amazing things you'll ever eat in your life. And dates didn't used to be like that you bought in a restaurant. 20 years ago, you didn't buy dates because they were horrible. And that's demand. That's people recognizing that, you know, this is a great product. Let's buy more of this. So dried fruit's a lot better than it used to be.
You give me a flashback.
Those green cherries.
No, the dates.
Oh, the dates?
Really sticky dates in a whiskey glass at the end of an evening some years ago. All right.
Okay, Chef's Challenge. Here you go, Tony.
No more PTSD.
You're going first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's upside down. Here you go. Let me help you out.
That makes it so much easier when it's upside down.
Yeah, put your glasses on.
Thanks a lot, yeah. All right, let's see. Four ducks. Muscovy ducks.
You're cooking for 30 people at your house on Christmas Eve.
I'm not going to do that.
Well,
first off, I'm going to work
right
on Christmas
now.
Eve.
You are right now. Well, yeah, so am I.
Two pheasant, 15 quail.
We're pretending that you're cooking at your house for 30 people.
So I need a methodology for these birds.
Okay,
that's
how about 30
thing.
People on Christmas Day? You'll be home on Christmas Day.
And I've cooked for 30 people before on Christmas Day.
All right, so
Day.
See?
All right. So the quail, you need to split these guys open, get them nice and flat, and I would season them well and get very, very heavy pans, very hot with oil. And those boned out or basically spread out quail, cook them under a stone, alla mattone, for just a few moments to get them to where they're very rare on those 15 quail. They're going to be easy to, at that point, go into a sheet pan, go in the oven, finish their cooking to get them to temp. Because what you're going to end up with is little, you know, a little bird farm, I guess.
Right.
On,
I thought it would be fun.
On platters. Yeah, no question. The pheasants, pheasants are the devil to keep from being dry. There are casseroles where, traditionally, you shoot a pheasant, you get the shot out, you stuff it with something and or wrap it in something. I'd wrap the pheasant in bacon, try to keep them whole, nice and tight, legs over the breast if you have good flexibility in your pheasants. And again, season them well, and always put a little bit of garlic in the cavity, and roast those guys in casserole in the oven with the top on for a while. And then the ducks, are these whole ducks?
Yes.
Okay. The whole ducks, I want to treat them all a little bit differently. That's the thing. So if the pheasant are being gently roasted in a moist environment in the oven, the ducks, I'm probably going to cut those ducks into the parts, and use the back and everything to make stock, which will end up giving me sauce.
That'll be good.
And I'll save the livers to enrich that sauce.
That'll be even better.
So
yes.
That'll be, and a little bit of the duck blood to thicken that sauce.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, yeah, going middle ages on you here.
That's how I like it.
And then you season well. And it's funny, duck, I like a couple of things with duck in particular, but cinnamon and cumin a little bit at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Black pepper, salt, roll those guys around in that, and then fry in heavier pans. So whether it's skillets or mm-hmm. you know, I have that one giant copper pan that would take probably two ducks at a time. But get those guys to medium rare in the pan. And again, then everything's ready to finish in the oven. Your pheasants are just ready to brown. The quail are ready to get up to medium rare, which is where people are going to want it. The duck, probably medium, where people are going to want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have this other business to deal with.
What's that?
Carrots, celery, onion, shallot, garlic, maitake mushrooms, thank you.
All the ingredients.
Yeah.
I gave you.
Fresh cranberries, walnuts, pecans, bread, oranges. Easy to do the oranges. I mean, I want the oranges for the duck. Mm-hmm. If I have some cognac in the house, I'm gonna make a garnish with caramelized oranges, a little bit of shallot, some of the cranberries. And a little bit of cognac, and use some of that duck sauce to garnish the ducks. The maitake mushrooms, I'd roast to get all kinds of flavor out of. And then you gave me cream and mirepoix. I'm gonna make a little bit of a cream sauce with some of the chicken stock that you have here, and reduce that till it's relatively tight, so that when the pheasant gets carved, the slices of the breast and the legs can just go out on that sauce, because they always need moisture. And the smoke from the bacon that the pheasants are wrapped in,
that'll be good.
We'll be good with that, especially the mushroom flavor.
Sorry.
And then for the quail, it's there's rice, there's bread. You can make pecan rice, it'd be pretty darn nice for the quails. Sweet potatoes, I'm not in a sweet potato moment in my life, so I may.
But
have
they're
to,
on your list, Tony. So I guess you're gonna have to use them.
I maybe have to use them to make chips and put blue cheese on them and make people have that with.
Have a little
snack in the beginning. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. You sound so happy about it.
My feelings about sweet potatoes are not good right now. I'm just telling the truth.
Did you use everything?
Everything but the bread.
Well, you could
serve
it.
The unspecified bread.
The unspecified bread can be for bread service.
There you go.
There.
Exactly.
See, I helped you out with your chef's
wonderful
challenge.
Adaptation. All right, let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. So, lamb racks, sweet potatoes. You're not in the mood, but you gave me sweet potatoes. Lamb racks, sweet potatoes, Blue Point oysters, woo, bulgur wheat, chioga beets with their greens, rice of your choice, Canadian bacon, lemons, parsley, what does that say, mint? Rye, flour, bull. Yes, you know I love rye so much. Hazelnuts. I hate rye. Balsamic 20-year-old vinegar. Parmigiano. Fromage blanc. Mirepoix. Green lentils. Cider vinegar. Extra virgin olive oil. Dairy. Well, I better get those beets going. I like to roast beets. And with their greens, their chagos are so pretty, and they have a nice level of sweetness to them. So I'll roast them in a pan with foil on, a little bit of water and salt in the bottom. Just let them roast gently until they're nice and tender. I'll have cut their greens off, and I'm going to julienne those greens and wash them really well and set them aside. And I'm going to make a salad with those greens. And I'm going to use a little bit of the parsley, a little bit of the mint, some of the hazelnuts, which I will roast in the oven, microplane some of the Parmigiano over the greens, use the 20-year balsamico with the extra virgin olive oil to make a dressing, and some of the fromage blanc as a garnish for the salad. And then the green lentils I'm going to cook with the Canadian bacon until they're just tender. So al dente. They're al dente. And then toss those with cider vinegar and extra virgin olive oil, and that's going to be the accompaniment for the lamb. The sweet potatoes I'm going to make a gratin with. So you gave me dairy, so I'm going to put a little bit of the... you didn't give me rosemary. Okay. Mirepoix. What am I going to do with that? Okay, so the sweet potatoes with a little bit of the leftover fromage blanc and cream in between the layers, and a little bit of butter and salt and pepper, a tiny bit of sugar, a little bit of white sugar, brown sugar, a tiny bit of honey. I don't want it to be sweet, but I want it to have some tone of sweetness. So just lay it low with the amount of the honey and the brown sugar in particular, but just a little bit, and make sure you do put salt and pepper in so it balances that, and make a gratin. So you have the sweet potato gratin, you have the warm green lentils with the cider vinegar and extra virgin olive oil to accompany the lamb racks. I'm going to roast the lamb racks, rub them with nothing because you've given me nothing. So salt and pepper.
Oh my God.
I'm going to grab some rosemary from my garden because,
please,
you know, it's just out there.
And please get some oil out of your cabinet.
So just kind of pull the leaves of the rosemary off the stem and rub them around in my hand for a little bit to get the oils going, and then mix it with a little bit of corn oil, salt and pepper, and just rub it into the racks and let it sit on there for probably 2 or 3 hours in the refrigerator just so it starts to perfume the meat. And then roast it. I'm going to take it off, that rosemary off, before I roast it, because I don't like to see what happens to the rosemary in the oven as the lamb rack is roasting. And I've used everything but the hazelnuts.
You used the hazelnuts.
Oh, I put them on the salad, didn't I?
In the salad,
yes.
Yeah.
All right, so then the lamb racks. And then the blue point oysters, that's easy. I mean, they're so darn good. I would just eat those raw. That would be out on the table for everyone to enjoy while all the food's getting made and finished up. That's a good list. Thanks, Tony.
You're welcome. Glad you enjoyed cooking those sweet potatoes.
I have nothing against sweet potatoes. I like them.
If you want to contact us, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Or if you want to download this or any one of our other podcasts, please go to the wypr.org homepage, find the Foreman and Wolf page, and you can find all kinds of jazzy episodes of Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. If you want to follow Chef Sandy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Cindy Wolf.
I am the real Tony Foreman, and that's my Instagram as well.
We wish you very happy holidays and hope you have a wonderful time with your family and sit around the table and really enjoy each other. And we wish you all the best.
Happy holidays, and thanks for listening.